Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we pass the mic to Ankit Kansagra, MD, an assistant professor in the Department of Internal Medicine at UT Southwestern Medical Center, who moderated a discussion on cellular therapies in lymphoma and multiple myeloma with Anita D'Souza, MD, an associate professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and Bagatellaria, MBBS, an assistant professor of medicine in the Department of Medicine at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. In our exclusive interview, Kansagra, D'Souza, and Delaria provided an in-depth look into the current state of cellular therapy in hematologic malignancies, the benefits and drawbacks of approved and investigational products, and new constructs for CAR-T in multiple myeloma and lymphoma.
Thank you, Dr. Delaria and Dr. D'Souza, for joining in today for our podcast talking about cellular therapies and hematological malignancies and how this impacts going forward in 2020-21. So I think maybe I will start with Dr. D'Souza. You know, what do you think? I mean, we had a fantastic ASH 2020 virtual. What do you think were the key takeaways from the myeloma cell therapy realm?
Yeah, I agree. This is such a wonderful time for physicians, scientists, as well as patients with the whole spectrum of new treatments that are coming into the pipeline. And I think myeloma has always been a model disease where a lot of immune-focused therapies have come in within the last two decades. And even looking at our current backbone of standard of care treatments, we have immunomodulatory drugs, we have proteasome inhibitors, we have a number of monoclonal antibodies. So it seems like we are now naturally progressing into the world of newer immune-based therapies with all kinds of antibody-drug conjugates, T-cell engagers, and of course the adoptive T-cell therapies. So really exciting time, and I think ASH 2020 kind of exemplified that.
Yeah. I think we certainly saw tons of bispecific and CAR T cell data. I mean, what were your takeaway from it? I think we certainly saw the Cilta cell from Janssen with their CARTITUDE 1 data being presented this year. And we already heard about the IDA-cel from BMS going in pretty strong at ASCO. How do you see both of these products being used in clinical practice, you know, as both of them potentially get approved in 2021?
Both are the ones that we have most experience with now, albeit still in the clinical trial setting. But Cilta-cel, certainly it looks like the winner in terms of absolute efficacy, as well as, you know, even the durability of responses. Although I was still a little concerned that, there is still a safety issue there. We are seeing some deaths that are attributed to treatment. So I think I would be interested in reading more about them and understanding further the toxicity. Same with IDA-cel. I think even with that, we are, it's not a free run, so to speak. There are some toxicity issues, even though, again, for a relapsed refractory population, we are seeing really impressive results. So I think between the durability of response and the toxicity signal, I think we still need to understand a little better.
Do you hope to offer both these cell therapies at your institution?
Yes, absolutely. I think currently we have access to both of these drugs in the setting of trials. So we are limited in what kind of patients can go through, how aggressive their relapse is. Also in terms of what is the available study, you know, at what line of treatment patients are. But once it becomes standard of, then the hope is that we can provide access to more patients with this treatment.
Maybe in the same line as LARTS in the lymphoma category, Dr. Delaria, what do you think was the key takeaways from ASH 2020 for LARTS and lymphoma cell therapy landscape so far for you?
Yeah, a lot of interesting abstract as you both probably have seen. What intrigued me the most was a lot of interesting stuff on off-the-shelf allogeneic CAR-T, both from the Allogen, and then there was a small study by Fate Therapeutic, the University of Minnesota is conducting only one patient they reported. But these technology is fascinating because as we are learning more and more about the large B-cell lymphoma and the role of CAR T, I think the first 1 month is the key for the CAR T and using the durable remission, which is slightly different than what we have seen with ALL and multiple myeloma, where maybe the ongoing CAR T activity might be required for durable responses. So the large B-cell lymphoma is probably an ideal disease to try something like that, where CAR T cells goes in, does a job, and then kind of goes away. Many times our high-grade proliferative disease patients don't have time to wait for 3, 4, sometimes 6 weeks to grow CAR T from the autologous source. And that was very interesting. And I hope that further study shows that these responses are durable because they certainly appears to be safe. There were no graft versus host disease or any bad neurotoxicity or CRS. In fact, the immune-mediated toxicity was lower than what traditionally seen with Yescarta, right? Other stuff is like with myeloma, as Dr. D'Souza says, is a BiTE therapy and a couple of abstracts in CD20-directed BiTEs, and it looks like they showed some data on even the CAR refractory large B-cell lymphoma where CD20 BiTE showed responses. And again, the follow-up was shorter, but if you think that the responses are maintained, that might be something to offer in a patient who are otherwise not eligible for CAR T. It's difficult to say whether it will be superior to CAR T or not, but certainly something to look forward to.
How do you use the currently approved FDA products? Do you offer both the products at your institution and for large cell lymphoma? And how do you pick and use those products in your day-to-day setting nowadays?
Yeah, so we have a three program under umbrella of our institute. So we have Vanderbilt Children's Hospital, Veterans Hospital, which we're aware of the one of the first VA hospital who is offering CAR T therapy for our Excellent. Veterans and university side. And we have both Yescarta and Kymriah available for the large cell population. Now, how to pick and choose, it kind of depends on the clinician as well as the patient. We have kind of moved our CAR T program completely outpatient. So even Yescarta, we are trying to do outpatient, and we have successfully Amazing. Done a number of cases. But especially our preference is just Yescarta, and that has to do with just institutional experience and what we have learned, that it appears that Yescarta probably has a higher overall response rate compared to TCCL or Kymriah at expense of higher toxicity, certainly. So in a patient with good KPS, with proliferative disease, we tend to kind of choose Yescarta. Patients who are overall frail, which we're worried about comorbidities and maybe trying to minimize the toxicity, we tend to choose the Kymriah. But again, there is no science behind it, to be honest. And I think more registry-based data currently ongoing with the CABMTR hopefully will answer Definitely. The question.
And then obviously there are no head-to-head trials, so makes it even harder.
Probably never going to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, so I think in the myeloma spectrum, we have a lot to learn from the lymphoma group, right? Because, I mean, we already have two CAR Ts out there. And as you mentioned, you know, the potential of outpatient therapy. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your outpatient CAR T experience. And maybe Dr. D'Souza can comment what she thinks is going to happen with the myeloma inpatient or outpatient therapies.
I guess a year ago, and it started because of finances, to be honest. That's how it starts, right? So we train our nurses, and what we gave was we gave a patient an iPad or an iPhone when they come for CAR T therapy. Yeah. The caregiver has to pass an exam. So there's like a multiple choice question exam where we teach them how to look for signs of neurotoxicity, how to do ice score, do the temperature check, blood pressure check every 4 hours, even during the nighttime. Yeah. And we decided that we need to see the patient at least 3 times, either in person or virtually within 24 hours. So we see them in our outpatient CAR T transplant unit in the morning at 4 p.m. And then we do video chat around 10 p.m. Where our on-call CAR T nurse practitioner actually does the I-score. They do like a physical exam, whatever they can virtually, and they submit their vitals. And then if everything checks out, then we see them again next morning. We are not admitting people for just fever, but if they do develop grade 2 or higher CRS for any neurotoxicity, we decided to admit them just for observation. Now we are early TOSI, early DEX center. I'm not sure how you guys are, but we have moved TOSI now for early or for grade two, and even for grade one neurotoxicity, we tend to give one dose of dexamethasone. Just to kind of keep them as much as outpatient as possible. And with this approach, I would say majority of our patients are spending most of their first 2 week outpatient. They do end up spending one or two nights in the hospital. I would say half of our patients, especially one with high burden disease or folks, but it's still a minority rather than original protocol with Yescarta, where for 10 days or 2 weeks they are in the hospital.
That's fantastic. That's excellent. That sounds like you guys are doing a robust process of even calling them at 10 p.m. at night and doing an iScore. Oh, I like that. That's very good. Yeah. Dr. D'Souza, what do you think? Are you guys doing outpatient CAR-Ts right now? And how do you think both the products between cilta-cel and ide-cel would you be deciding on inpatient versus outpatient therapies?
Yeah, so I think that's like Dr. Dholaria mentioned, this all comes with experience. And, you know, in the past, we used to not do outpatient transplants, but now routinely we are doing autologous and even allogeneic bone marrow transplants as outpatient. So I think as we all, there's always a learning curve involved, but as we get more experience with using cellular therapies, I think we all are going to get more comfortable. And with algorithms in place, and I think there's also, you know, as Dr. Dholaria mentioned, with virtual health, use of mobile technology, wearable devices, are we going to be in a place in a year from now where we can even predict when CRS is going to happen or neurotoxicity is going to happen and get these patients sooner to the clinic? So I think it's a really exciting time, and appropriate use of newer technologies. I think the hope is that we can do these treatments in carefully selected patients, do them as outpatient. Your question about which of the two treatments, I think that's a really good question. And I wonder, you know, with cilta-cel, for example, the timing of CRS is a little different from ide-cel. It tends to happen a little later. So I think maybe that means that the first few days, patients might be okay doing once a day visit, but later on, when the timing of CRS is expected, that might be the time where patients might need the 2 to 3 times a day check-in.
And I think that has to do a lot with the construct of the CAR-Ts. I think it's coming out how their co-stimulatory domain is. And I think Bhagi mentioned in terms of some of the newer allo CARs, which was very impressive to see, like zero CRS or like, you know, very low grade of neurotoxicity. What are like the new constructs you guys are looking forward to in CAR-Ts, which are getting ready to be in the clinic? I know you guys at Wisconsin already have, you know, the in-house CAR which you are generating. Tell us a little bit about that, and where do you see the, you know, the newer constructs of CAR-T going, making an improvement in the cell therapy realm?
Yeah, so our in-house CAR is a dual targeted CAR, CD19 and BCMA. So the advantage with having it developed within our system here is the convenience. So we take away some time involved in the manufacturing process. It's a closed unit right here at our institution. And we have shown in lymphoma that it's feasible, safe, and effective. So that's something we are very interested in and seemed like the natural next disease to test in. I was also very impressed with the allogene product in myeloma, which was presented at ASH this year. I think, you know, having the option of a off-the-shelf CAR-T, I think makes a lot of sense. And the concern for graft versus host disease was very elegantly taken care of by having the CD52 CAR added to the BCMA CAR. Correct. This trial was shown to be safe, feasible, as well as, you know, with a signal of efficacy with the higher doses. So I think both options to me look like something that we need to investigate further and hopefully add on to the repertoire of different cellular therapies we can offer to patients.
I think that's it. I mean, the AlloCAR, the transposons from the Poseidon was another really interesting model where they were able to carry heavy loads without having to do a retroviral insertion. So I think it's certainly some key CAR-T constructs coming in the way. So maybe in you know, the next session, maybe we can talk about where do you see the CAR T therapy shifting its landscape from relapse refractory, multiple myeloma, or large cell lymphoma, and what do you see in the next 5 years? Where is this going to land? And maybe I can ask Dr. Dholaria where, you know, in lymphoma, we already have two, and maybe the third CAR T therapy getting to be approved in near months with liso-cel. Where do you see it's going to go next?
There is a lot of excitement in the field, certainly, but I'm also a realist at times. To be honest, these are very expensive therapies, very resource intensive, and people are claiming that it will replace the R-CHOP, and I'm really having a hard time believing that unless you show me the data. I know Zuma 7 is still ongoing in Correct. Process, so we have to see which is our upfront CAR T, yes, CAR T in high risk DLBCL after two cycles of chemoimmunotherapy. So R-CHOP still cures 50 to 60% of the people, okay?
Correct.
So I do see CAR T moving a little bit ahead in the treatment paradigm, maybe as a second line, especially for our primary R-CHOP refractory or patients who are otherwise not eligible for transplant, for sure. Now, whether it will replace a transplant or not, hard to say, right? Because auto transplant, you look at the long-term durability, we still cure half of the people, right? Given as long as you have a chemosensitive disease, and that's a catch, right? So there is a selection bias on both treatment. But certainly I do see this benefiting a lot of our chemo refractory patients who are never traditionally eligible for auto transplant anyways. We also recently saw a nice analysis from Mehdi Hamdani and group in CIBMTR, a patient who are in a partial remission, auto transplant still give us a pretty decent responses. So not necessarily, and that's not many time in a community oncologist census, a patient who are in a PR, but still with chemosensitive disease and asking us to do CAR T. And we're like, well, we really can offer a traditional autograft and patient will do just probably fine. So that's for lymphoma. But for ALL, I think it's a different disease, but certainly a lot of interesting data. At least in adult side, what we have learned is that without consolidative allograft, the relapses are quite high. What more and more, as we learn more in longer follow-up with Kymriah, and I think pediatric group also published a recent real-world analysis of their experience in PEDS and AYA and TISA-cell, and they also show that they continue to see relapses, especially with high burden disease. Yeah. So CAR T more will be like a bridge therapy to an allograft. Now, if you ask me, will you do a TISA-cell to a bridge to allotransplant, or will you do a Blincyto, right, or inotuzumab?
Yeah.
I don't know, because those therapies works very well also.
Yeah.
So unless you have but those therapies are also moving ahead in the treatment. So now MD Anderson showed quite impressive data with combining mini CVAD with INO and BLIN.
Correct.
And over 60-70% remission without transplant in older frail patients. So I think it's a dynamic field. That's all I can say. As more data emerge, you will learn more.
And I think you make a fantastic point that are we ready to substitute with an autologous stem cell transplant, which is very cost-effective, well-proven therapy for 40, 50 some years. And I feel like, you know, knowing the cost-effectiveness analysis and the quality of life analysis or patient-reported outcomes, I think those are going to be key as we, you know, kind of try to dissect out what product is there. Because, I mean, these are a couple $100,000 products at least, right? And if not more. And so I think that brings a question in the myeloma spectrum where, you know, unfortunately we have gone into this continuing therapy for the rest of the life for our patients. And, you know, we saw in myeloma, I mean, CAR T therapies have deep responses but are not curative. And some trials are now, or a lot of trials are now hoping to do maintenance after CAR T cell therapy, which is exciting but a bummer for most of our patients. So what do you see, Dr. D'Souza? Is changing in earlier lines of setting as we see the trials happen, and where do you hope to see it going?
Yeah, I think that this is a great question. You know, multiple myeloma is a very heterogeneous disease. So we have patients with standard risk disease who do really well with upfront auto maintenance with single agent Revlimid. They get long PFS1. So in those settings, perhaps I wouldn't want to use CAR anywhere until, you know, second or beyond relapse. But then there is the high risk multiple myeloma, where even this upfront package of induction transplant maintenance is not sufficient. So in that setting, I would definitely like to see more studies being done of comparing CAR as an upfront option or perhaps at first relapse. I think another group that is worth studying is patients who relapse early after an auto transplant. And this biologically is another high-risk disease group. Yeah. Where we know that these patients have, after that, their post-relapse survival is actually quite poor. So in that setting, I would like to use these types of immune therapies early in the disease course. We also know that once patients have had multiple relapses and are refractory to multiple lines of treatment, the effectiveness of those T cells might also not be as good. And so it makes sense to at least get these patients leukapheresed early on in the disease course. As auto transplanters, we are used to collecting stem cells in patients early in the disease course and storing and perhaps never using them. So I think further research in trying to understand, can we also leukapherese the T cells at that same time and keep these in storage? And do they work just as well when we transduce them years down the line? I think those are good questions that we need to get answers on.
Well, that's an awesome point. And I think, you know, and it's much easier to collect T cells than stem cells without GCSF or chemo. Awesome. So maybe as we come to the end of our podcast, maybe ask one question for both of you. Going back to Dr. Dholaria, you know, tell me, what do you feel is going to be the biggest challenge as we continue to expand these CAR T cell therapy, you know, in maybe just 2021-22, you know, next 2-3 years, what do you see a huge challenge to face or facing CAR T cell therapy or cell therapy?
The key challenge will be going to be for the practicing oncologists will be to fine-tune like where to put these therapies. The thing is, the field is developing so rapidly that even before we have 2-year follow-up data on Yescarta, we have like 5 other CAR Ts, which everybody is claiming are more safer and more effective. If you look at all these phase 1 studies and from the China, you see like 20 different CAR studies every ASH, right? But if you look at the responses and stuff, the responses are very similar. So not necessarily adding something new in the construct gonna necessarily give you some more efficacy. We'll see. So I think that will be the one challenge for the people who are actually doing the CAR T therapy, is to kind of digest all this massive information and kind of understand where to put this into the patient context and how to pick and choose the best and safest option for your patient, especially now where the BiTE therapies and ADCs are becoming more and more effective and safe across the hematological malignancies. The challenges from the patient perspective would be to get it paid. That's been an ongoing struggle, and I'm sure all of you have the same issues where you have a rapidly proliferative disease and it's taking 2 months to do a single case agreement and you lose the patient. So even though CMS has kind of come up with some policy at a national level, it's still a lot of patchwork based on state different insurance coverages and Medicare, and centers are still quite apprehensive about offering this curative therapy to Medicare beneficiary because of these reasons, right? So I think that will be, those are the two main challenges I see.
Maybe I will ask you the other way question, Dr. D'Souza. What do you think is most exciting in terms of cell therapy in the next 2 years and where you feel that we would be easily able to address these challenges?
I think that, you know, the things that, you know, I want to see more of, how do we make CARs more durable and persistent? And how do we still take care of the relapse aspect, right? So one is persistence, but also can we target more than one antigen? So right now in myeloma, it's all about BCMA, but we are starting to see more data on CD19, on GPRC5D, and other target cell antigens. So the next then question is, how do we combine these potential, you know, either dual targeted or tandem CARs? And ASH was really this year, I was just blown by some of the educational sessions and scientific sessions on how people are investigating these approaches. I think at the end of the day, though, we still have to be pragmatic. And it's really nice that we have all this cool research happening in the ivory towers, but how do we get it out to people, right? Like most myeloma in the US is still treated in the community. And when it comes to clinical trials, we see huge disparities. We have racial disparities. We also have age disparities. A lot of these cellular therapy studies, if you look at the median age, it's in the high 50s, low 60s, whereas the median age of myeloma at diagnosis is in the late 60s or so nearly true. 70s. So as we get these drugs in our clinical armamentarium, I think we all have to be very conscious about how do we improve access. And some of this has to come from community oncologists, you know. Currently, CARs are still, administered at very specialized transplant centers. That relationship between community oncologists and these specialty centers is still so important.
This is fantastic. And, you know, I think for our listeners, if I can, you know, conclude some thoughts, what I was writing down as we were talking, you know, I think the big point I hear loud and clear from both of you is access to therapy, maybe doing any different ways, you know, trying off the shelf CARs, doing outpatient CAR T cell therapy, or doing homegrown CAR T cell therapy. I mean, access is a big challenge. I think for our community oncology physician, the number two is, you know, given the number of clinical trials everybody is doing, newer constructs, earlier lines of therapy, I think it's getting them referred right now to the right centers, the nearby CAR T centers as early as possible, or at least picking up a phone and asking the colleague that what do you have in the early setting. I think that's what I find is probably going to be the easiest to help them. And I think last but not the least, I think as you all said, you know, how are we going to work as a nation to address the challenges, maybe it the cost issue or the quality of life issue or the patient reported outcomes and making it more accessible for all age bracket. And I think that's going to be the key for us in the next upcoming years to solve. So this is a fantastic session. And again, thank you both of you guys for joining it, and hopefully we can have something like this in future.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives in cancer webinars. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.